It's Tuesday, the 6th of August, 2026, and you're listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. I'm in Flagstaff today bringing you news of interest to our veterans community here in Arizona. And today we have news from our military news websites, as well as our veterans service organizations, publications, and websites, and of course, from the Veterans Administration. And our first item is from Stars and Stripes, their website, stripes.com. Veterans disability payments limiting access to public assistance programs report fines. This is from the 5th of August by Matthew M. Burke. Many veterans who receive payouts for service-related disabilities are being shut out from a range of public assistance programs because the benefit puts them over income eligibility thresholds, according to a new study. RAND Corporation researchers looked at 15 social safety net and public insurance programs and 4 veterans benefits programs as part of a report issued last week. A dozen required applicants to prove that their income or assets are low enough to qualify. The think tank recommended that policymakers consider whether Veterans Affairs disability income should count toward eligibility for various forms of government aid. VA disability compensation is the largest federal disability program in the U.S., the report said. Provides monthly cash payments to veterans with service-connected disabilities and those whose pre-existing conditions were made worse through military service. RAND triangulated the data using 3 surveys that quantify disability rating, income, and program participation. The sample included households under 300% of the federal poverty line, which is $15,960 for a single-person household or $33,000 for a family of 4, according to the Health and Human Services Department website. Veteran households that do not receive disability compensation generally participate in public assistance at the same rates as those of non-veterans, the report said. Households with at least one working-age member receiving veteran disability compensation are 10% less likely to report receiving SNAP aid, generally known as food stamps, researchers found. Between 2021 and 2023, 17% of households with a disabled veteran used food stamps, compared with 27% of non-veteran households, the report said. Disabled veterans under 62 were 3% less likely to receive housing assistance than non-veteran households, and the figure was double that for elderly disabled veterans. Though not treated as income for tax purposes, disability compensation may count against eligibility for public assistance. The RAND report highlighted some of the discrepancies among programs. For example, Medicaid and Social Security do not factor VA disability compensation into eligibility, but it is a consideration for the Housing Choice Voucher Program, otherwise known as Section 8, and Supplemental Security Income. VA disability income is included in the eligibility calculations for the Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program as well. Disabled veterans under 62 were between 1.3 and 5% less likely to receive benefits from that program than non-veterans were across 2 surveys versus between 0.8% and 3% for veterans 62 and over, according to the data. The disability program paid $163 billion in fiscal 2024 compared with $155 billion for Social Security disability insurance, the report said. The amount of compensation is determined by the combined severity of the documented conditions as well as personal factors like the presence of dependents or special needs. Besides recommending explicit coordination between policymakers overseeing and administrating these programs and the veteran policy community, RAND also called for improved data collection. In addition, researchers said there should be better communication with veterans about how their benefits could affect their eligibility for public assistance programs. And that's Veterans Disability Payments Limiting Access to Public Assistance Programs Report Finds. Our next item is from taskandpurpose.com. VA to test whether GLP-1s can treat alcohol use disorder. The new Cessation or Reduction of Alcohol Consumption in Veterans Trial, or CRAVE trial, will see if the popular weight loss drug can curb alcohol use. This article is by Nicholas Slayton from the 31st of July. The Department of Veterans Affairs is launching a clinical trial to see if semaglutide, the chemical used in popular weight loss drugs, can also be used to help treat alcoholism. The new trial, announced on Thursday, will screen more than 600 veterans with moderate or severe alcohol use disorder over the course of 24 weeks, seeing if taking semaglutide-based medications can help reduce alcohol intake. Enrollment for the Cessation or Reduction of Alcohol Consumption in Veterans Trial, or CRAVE trial, started this week. The VA is looking for veterans between the ages of 18 and 80 for the study. Participants will receive weekly injections of either semaglutide or a placebo. Researchers will monitor them for 24 weeks to track changes in drinking, health, and quality of life to determine whether the medication offers a meaningful new treatment option. The nearly half-year study is expected to wrap up in the spring of 2027. The trial will be carried out at 18 VA medical centers around the country. Semaglutide was developed as a way to help treat diabetes, but is proven to be effective as a weight loss drug. It's used in drugs on the market such as Ozempic and Wegovy. A study published in March, cited by the VA in its announcement of the CRAVE trial, found that taking GLP-1 medication showed a reduced risk of developing substance use disorders and risks in people who already experience such disorders. This clinical trial reflects medical research that VA is uniquely situated to launch and is aimed directly at benefiting veterans, VA Secretary Doug Collins said in the announcement. By exploring emerging treatment options like the use of a GLP-1 for alcohol use disorder, we aim to expand the tools available to help veterans take control of their health and recovery. Alcohol use disorder affects a large number of Americans nationwide, veteran or otherwise. More than 29 million people in the country experienced alcohol use disorder in 2022, and more than 400,000 veterans have been diagnosed with it, according to the VA. A March 2024 study from the American Journal of Medicine found that the high-risk alcohol use rose since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. The VA has tried other studies and trials to look at new ways of helping veterans deal with alcohol use disorder. In May, the department launched a new trial to see if MDMA-assisted therapy could help treat alcohol use disorder and post-traumatic stress disorder. Veterans interested in participating in the CRAVE trial are encouraged to visit clinicaltrials.gov or contact their local VA medical center. As the trial is just starting and findings are far out, the VA urged veterans not to self-medicate using GLP-1s or use it in place of approved treatments. According to the department's own site, alongside therapy-based treatments, there are approved medications to help veterans deal with alcohol withdrawal symptoms. And that's VA to test whether GLP-1s can treat alcohol use disorder. Our next item is from MilitaryTimes.com. Risk of developing ALS varies by service, study finds. Patricia Keim writes for MilitaryTimes.com on the 4th of August. Veterans of the Air Force, Navy, and Coast Guard may be at higher risk for developing amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, or ALS, compared with veterans from other branches, according to research published in the journal Neurology. In a review of 9.9 million veterans in the VA medical system from 2000 to 2024, researchers from the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health, the Department of Veterans Affairs, and elsewhere found that 14,419 patients had received an ALS diagnosis. In the group with ALS, 46% were Army veterans, nearly the same percentage of soldiers in the entire patient cohort. Using the rate of ALS diagnoses among Army veterans as the baseline and adjusting for sex, race, and ethnicity, researchers found that Air Force veterans had a 29% higher rate, former Coast Guard members had a 26% higher rate, and Navy veterans had a 15% higher rate. Marines had the lowest rate at 22% below that of Army veterans. Overall, officers had a 64% higher rate than enlisted personnel, while women officers had a 72% higher rate. Differences among branches were more apparent in men ages 61 and younger and less evident among men older than 75. Our study looked at the rates of ALS among people in different branches of the U.S. military and found ALS rates varied considerably by branch and rank, with larger differences among younger veterans, said study author Mark Weisskopf at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health in a release. ALS is a rare disease diagnosed in roughly 5,000 Americans each year, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, a fatal illness most famously associated with baseball legend Lou Gehrig and British astrophysicist Stephen Hawking. It is a progressive disease that affects the motor neurons, causing them to lose connectivity and die off. There are two types of ALS: sporadic, meaning occurring without a known cause in the general population, and familial, likely the result of an inherited genetic mutation, according to the ALS Association. While military personnel are diagnosed with ALS at nearly twice the rate of civilians, the cause has not been scientifically proven. The VA presumes the condition to be service-connected, given the heightened occurrence in the veteran population. Researchers have theorized that exposure to hazardous environments and substances, including burn pits, jet fuel, exhaust, heavy metals, dioxins, and other toxic materials, may contribute, but no direct connection has been proven. Our findings suggest that officers and those serving in the Air Force, Navy, or Coast Guard may have been exposed to military environments that increase risk of ALS, said Weisskopf. Future research should aim to identify these exposures. In the civilian population, some occupations such as airline pilots, truck drivers, metal workers, and those who work with pesticides and other toxic substances are associated with increased ALS risk, according to a 2022 Columbia University study. The authors noted that the likelihood of developing ALS is low, even in the U.S. military. Of the 9.9 million veteran records reviewed, less than 0.2% of patients were diagnosed with ALS, according to the study. It is important to note that ALS is rare and the overall risk remains small, so even statistically significant increases associated with branch and rank represent only modest increases in risk among military personnel, Weisskopf said. Thus, risk of developing ALS varies by service, study finds. Our next item is from MilitaryTimes.com. The Army certifies its first equestrians as it revamps horse care. This is by Eve Sampson from the 5th of August. Army soldiers for generations have guided horse-drawn caissons through Arlington National Cemetery as they escort the country's fallen to their final resting place. Now, as the service overhauls the animal's care, soldiers who care for the horses have a career classification of their own. The Army recently established the 08H Army Equestrian Military Occupational Specialty, and Staff Sergeant Sean Tabor and Sergeant Damian Copeland, both assigned to the Quezon Detachment at Joint Base Meyer-Henderson Hall, are among the first soldiers to qualify for the new role after completing an 18-week horsemanship program. When the 08H opportunity came around, there was no hesitation. I immediately jumped on it. There was no second thought or doubt about doing it, said Tabor, who has served in the detachment for 8 years as an infantryman. The 08H specialty replaced the military horseman identifier and, according to an Army release, is open to infantry soldiers in the grades of E5 to E9. It's a role, the Army says, contributes to recruiting, public outreach, and military funeral honors. During the initial 12-week program, soldiers learn grooming, groundwork, and communication with horses in the basic horsemanship course before moving on to horse driving and the Quezon Detachment's distinctive postillion riding method during the advanced horsemanship course for 6 more weeks. Copeland, who has served in the detachment for 4 years, said that when he was in processing, he was excited to learn about the opportunity to work with horses. During my time at Quezon, we had our first state funeral in more than 20 years for former President Jimmy Carter. Taking part in that funeral reinforced the importance of our mission and the honor of serving in a role that very few soldiers have the opportunity to experience, he said in the release. Previously scheduled to end, the Army, in December 2025, announced it was retaining military working equid programs, which include Defense Department horses, mules, and donkeys in Texas and Kansas. The designation comes after the Army resumed limited use of horse-drawn caissons at Arlington National Cemetery in mid-2025, following a 2-year suspension prompted by concerns over the welfare of the horses. The service halted the program in 2023 after 2 horses, Mickey and Tony, died in 2022 from colon impactions linked to substandard feed and living conditions. According to the Defense Department, the Army upgraded equipment to replace wooden saddles with lighter custom leather saddles. The service also decreased the caisson's weight by over 1,000 pounds and made other adjustments to lessen the strain on the horses. A 2025 release also said the soldiers' training had shifted from impromptu methods to a structured pipeline, with the basic course launched in 2024, held at a private stable in Virginia, and then a 6-week camp located at an equestrian sports facility in Florida. We don't get soldiers from horse backgrounds anymore, said Army Major Wes Strickland, the 3rd Infantry Regiment Public Affairs Officer at the time, said in the 2025 statement. So we teach everything: how to walk up to a horse, saddle it, clean a stall. That's Army certifies its first equestrians as it revamps horse care. Our next item is from Stripes.com by Matthew Adams from the 31st of July. Memorial for Gulf War Veterans nears opening in October. Washington. Veterans of Operations Desert Shield and Desert Storm will have a memorial on the National Mall in October, more than 35 years after the Persian Gulf War. We're probably 90% complete. We're far from kicking up our feet on the desk, Scott Stump, president and CEO of the National Desert Storm Memorial Association, told reporters on a tour of the memorial. But let's commemorate what this represents and who it represents. The memorial, scheduled to be dedicated October 24th, honors the nearly 700,000 Americans who served during the war. Sits near Constitution Avenue and 23rd Street Northwest, a short walk from both the Vietnam Veterans Memorial and the Lincoln Memorial. The Gulf War was an armed conflict in which the U.S. led an international coalition in response to Iraq's invasion and annexation of Kuwait. The war consisted of 2 phases, Operation Desert Shield, August 1990 to January 17, 1991, which focused on the defense of neighboring Saudi Arabia, and Operation Desert Storm, January 17th through February 28th of 1991, the campaign to liberate Kuwait. A national military parade was held in Washington in June 1991 to celebrate the U.S. victory. The U.S. Park Police estimated the crowd at 200,000, the Associated Press reported at the time. The opening design element honors a key strategy that helped secure the victory. As you enter the memorial from the left, the intent is to commemorate the left hook formation that U.S. troops used to move north and then east during Desert Storm, effectively cutting off Iraqi forces in Kuwait. At the center sits a massive coalition shield engraved with the names of countries that joined the effort to liberate Kuwait. The shield will also serve as a fountain where water will emerge from beneath it and flow through channels across the memorial, said Skip Gaffam, a design partner at Olin and the National Desert Storm Memorial's lead landscape architect. Protective coverings currently conceal a falcon and eagle that represent Kuwait and the U.S., Gaffam said. They will be revealed when the memorial opens. The idea is that they're flying in relation to each other, but the Kuwait Sacred Falcon is flying off on its own eventually. It's been liberated, Gaffam said. The effort to get a memorial started for Stump in 2010. Stump, a Marine reservist in the infantry during Desert Storm, is modest about his service. I guarded a lot of bombs, guarded a lot of aircraft, and the only distinction I probably have in a very undistinguished military career, I'm probably the only one out of 700,000 who completed their BS degree in a foxhole in Saudi Arabia, Stump added. In 2010, as the 20th anniversary of Desert Storm was approaching, Stump realized the war and the troops were not being properly recognized and remembered. I guess I'm just one of those that, you know, has a hard head or whatever you want to call it. I was persistent and stayed with it, Stump said. I had no idea what it was going to entail on the front side. I don't think anybody could. In June 2013, former Representative Phil Rowe, Democrat of Tennessee, introduced legislation in Congress to allow construction on federal land in Washington. President Barack Obama authorized construction of the memorial in 2014, and President Donald Trump signed legislation in 2017 allowing for the memorial to be built near the National Mall. The memorial was originally slated to be on the Constitution Avenue Belvedere, a strip of land along the Potomac River. Members of the National Desert Storm War Memorial Association opposed the location because they said it was too isolated and difficult for visitors to walk to from other memorials. In 2018, after the National Capital Planning Commission decided on the southwest corner of 23rd Street and Constitution Avenue, the Commission of Fine Arts voted in favor of the new location, marking the end of a multi-year process to select the site. The location comes with a lot of restrictions, Gaffam explained, because they could not make the memorial too tall and obstruct views, but it was worth the location, Gaffam said. The National Park Service has estimated the memorial could see 5 to 6 million visitors each year, he added. The memorial's proximity to the Vietnam Veterans Memorial is significant because many of the younger enlisted troops and officers who served in Vietnam ended up serving as senior commanders during Desert Storm, the architect said. It's also close to the State Department, whose diplomatic efforts were important to the war. The memorial is expected to cost more than $40 million. Stump said the state of Kuwait is the project's largest donor, with more than $25 million. Stump hopes that visitors are inspired by the memorial. The coalition, that's something to celebrate, he said. You tell people that you had 30-some-odd countries, different languages, different religions, five continents of the world come together. People would look at you like you're crazy, like, that's impossible. No, it happened. I mean, what a great story. And that's Memorial for Gulf War Veterans nears opening in October. Next, from Stripes.com, we have six Operation Iraqi Freedom veterans receive Purple Heart in the Hall of Heroes. This is from the 31st of July. Six service members received the Purple Heart on Wednesday during a Pentagon Hall of Heroes ceremony honoring their actions in Operation Iraqi Freedom. Today we will recognize six Americans who paid the very real price in service to this country, a price in the hardest currency that our profession knows. That currency is blood, said Marine Corps General Christopher Mahoney, Vice Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who presented the award. The recipients of the oldest military decoration were Army Brigadier General Gregory Holden, retired Army Sergeant First Class Lauritza Hamby, retired Army Major Tony Jones, retired Army Lieutenant Colonel Mario Roberts, and retired Air Force Colonel Mark Wisher. Major Gregory Stone of the Idaho Air National Guard was honored posthumously, with his son Joshua Stone accepting the medal on his behalf. Kind of emotional right now and at a loss for words, but I'm just happy for all of us, and I'm happy for those who came before us and all those who are going to come after us, Roberts said. The service members were wounded March 23, 2003, during a grenade attack by a fellow service member at Camp Pennsylvania in Kuwait, with Stone dying from his injuries 2 days later, according to a Defense Department news release. It means a lot coming out here, receiving this on his behalf, and getting to meet everyone my father served with for those 3 weeks in Kuwait, Stone said. Stone was 7 years old when his father was killed in the attack. It means a lot, Holden said. It's a complete honor that they finally recognize this. Huge thanks to Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth for really making this happen. It's truly an honor. And that six Operation Iraqi Freedom veterans received Purple Heart in the Hall of Heroes. Next we have, from MilitaryTimes.com, an article by Patricia Keim, VA Medical Center Clinics in Spokane evacuated for wildfire. This is from the 3rd of August. Patients and staff at Mann Grand Staff Veterans Affairs Medical Center in Spokane, Washington, were evacuated Saturday because of wildfires that have encroached on the state's second largest city, burning at least 600 structures as of Monday. VA staff evacuated an unknown number of patients to local hospitals and are caring for 27 patients at area shelters, according to the facility's Facebook page. The medical center, which lies less than a third of a mile from the fire perimeter as of Monday, will remain closed with future operations to be determined. More than 60,000 people have been evacuated from the area as a result of three fires collectively known as the Spokane Complex Fire. More than 8,000 acres had burned as of Monday with 0% containment, according to the Washington State Department of Natural Resources. Mann Grand Staff is closest to the Old Trails Fire, which began Saturday and was fueled by high winds. We are grateful for the support received. Spokane VA extends our sincere condolences to all victims, including local VA staff members who, like so many, have lost so much, VA officials wrote on the hospital's Facebook page. According to the Post, Spokane area VA outpatient clinics and business operation centers are also closed. The hospital provides administrative and services for local VA clinics, including records, pharmacy management, and specialty care. Mann Grand Staff is a 46-bed facility with more than 1,400 full-time positions, including its clinics. And that's VA Medical Center Clinics in Spokane, evacuated for wildfire. You're listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. If you'd like to listen to Weekly Reveille as it streams or at a time of your choosing, you can go to the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org, or you can download the Sun Sounds of Arizona app, and that's available for your iPhone or iPad from the Apple App Store, or from the Google Play Store for your Android phone or tablet. And you can listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona streaming on your Amazon Dot, Echo, or Show. I'd like to turn now to the Military Officer magazine of the Military Officers Association of America for this article, The Art of Healing. From pottery to painting, art is helping veterans process trauma and rebuild community after service. This item is by Kathy Rowell. Over the past decade, U.S. Navy Chief Gunner's Mate Alicia Prescott has endured more than her share of trauma. The Chief Petty Officer's voice fills with emotion when she recalls serving aboard a ship that responded to the 2017 collisions of USS Fitzgerald, DDG 62, and later USS John S. McCain, DDG 56. Two separate tragedies that claimed the lives of 17 sailors, as well as challenges of a past personal relationship. I suffer from PTSD, nightmares, sleeplessness. It's been a pretty wild ride, she said. Prescott, who will retire in September after 20 years of service, is among a growing number of veterans turning to art as a path toward healing. A lifelong painter, in January, she joined Veterans Art Project, a California-based nonprofit that offers free classes in ceramics, glass, woodworking, and bronze casting for veterans and their families and caregivers. Yet it isn't painting that's helping her heal, it's the feel of clay in her hands. There's something about pottery, the way that clay responds to every single little thing that you do. It's so grounding, she said. Whether you're hand-building or you're on the wheel, you're almost in full control, and at the same time, you almost have no control because the wheel and the clay have a mind of their own. It's incredible. The calming effects have translated into real progress in managing stress. I'm sleeping again, Prescott said. My anxiety is down. I just feel better. It's directly correlated to just having my hands in clay and on the wheel. According to findings cited by the VA, participation in the arts can help veterans improve fine motor skills and cognitive functioning, manage stress and substance use challenges, cope with the symptoms of PTSD and traumatic brain injury, and strengthen both self-esteem and overall well-being. Steve Dilley, whose parents were in the Navy and who holds a Master's of Fine Arts in Ceramics, founded the Veterans Art Project in 2009 after recognizing the challenges service members faced when returning home from deployments to the Middle East. After 9/11, it dawned on me that my artistic responsibility was to help people in my community through the only means that helped me, which was having access to nonverbal means of expression and process, he said. If you have a way of sharing, you have a means not to not suppress or repress your thoughts, hopes, and fears. On the surface, creating pottery might not seem that transformative, Dilley said, but every decision, what shape, what kind of handle, what color glaze, gives participants an opportunity to exercise choice and regain a sense of agency. I think it leads to a lot of other really beneficial things, and these are public health outcomes, he said. We can interrupt isolation or interrupt poor decision-making if we get them engaged with the general population, like we do with our pop-up art cafes. You have veterans who may have been practicing their art in their extra bedroom or on their dining room table, and now they're in a park setting, and they might talk to 30 or 40 people about their paintings, and they may end up selling a piece or two. Even though the financial return may be modest, I think what it offers them is an opportunity to be seen and heard in a very important way. Dilley believes participating in the arts allows people to rebuild a deep sense of purpose. When you join the service, you have a sense of purpose. You know what you're doing, he said. And for many of our participants, through no fault of their own, that lifestyle in the military is taken away from them, either by injury or they come to their 20 years and they say, thank you very much. The arts are an opportunity to rebuild your identity. And it's not like we're taking away the service point. That's always part of who you are. But the arts just add to it. They embellish it. While Veterans Art Project's headquarters and many of its classes are in Vista, California, the nonprofit has expanded to several college campuses across the nation where courses have become a gateway to further educational opportunities. Plans are also in the works to expand into the New York City metro area. Finding healing in clay. Prescott, who is participating in an internship at Veterans Art Project through the Pentagon's SkillBridge program leading up to her retirement, says, Working with Clay has been especially liberating after 2 decades in the structured environment of the military. I've always been a perfectionist, she said. With painting, I would overwork things and overwork things and overwork things, and painting will let you do that. You can work on the same painting for 8 months and it's fine. Pottery, you can't. The clay will get too oversaturated and it will quit on you. So it kind of forces you to let go a little bit and relax and just let things be, which has been very transformative for me. Learning to quiet her inner critic has been one of the biggest breakthroughs. Typically in art, our harshest critic is ourselves, and you can learn to let that go, she said. Art's the first place I've felt safe in a long time, more than making art. Former senior airman Melvin Nix, who served 6 years in the Air Force, now works professionally as an artist, balancing visual effects work with a growing focus on fine art. Previously working in oils, Nix explored watercolor through a boot camp offered by the Patriot Art Foundation. That nonprofit, founded in 2019 by artist Mary White, offers free materials and education to veterans with the dream to give veterans a way to express themselves when words can't, and to provide a way to navigate a sometimes difficult world with creativity, purpose, and joy. During the program, he discovered a deep appreciation for watercolor. I felt that watercolor offers a flexibility, he said. I've seen many different presentations done with watercolor that don't look like the same medium. His goal is to become an independent artist and to talk to people about art. I've had many shows and it's been very enjoyable to connect with the public, and many times when I shared with them about the inspiration behind my work, it's offered me an opportunity to see some healing take place, like right then and there in the gallery. That for me has been really refreshing and awesome. I'd love to do more of that. The Patriot Art Foundation emerged from a White exhibition titled We the People, Portraits of Veterans in America, a collection of 50 veteran portraits. From talking with veterans that came to see the show, I realized that art could be a way for them to find a means of connection and expression, White said. Through the power of art, we've been able to give many servicemen and women a valuable path to whole health. The Foundation's Finance Committee Chairman, Colonel Michael Greenberg, U.S. Army retired, sees art as a practical yet powerful tool that meets veterans where they are and helps them build meaningful connections and confidence. The Patriot Art Foundation exists to give veterans purpose, expression, and connection through art, especially those who struggle to communicate their experiences in the traditional ways of speaking. It's not just about art being created, but confidence, connection, and healing, said Greenberg, a life member of MOA. Greenberg, who deployed 7 times, noted that military experience is different for everyone. Some people love to talk about it, some people hate to talk about it. But what I found is there is always some type of solution that can help you through whatever troubles you're going through, and art's one of them. We're not just teaching art, we're restoring connection. The Foundation offers free art supplies, 6-week introductory online courses in watercolor and drawing, 8-week classes in partnership with 25 VA hospitals nationwide, an annual Art of Valor Veterans Painting event, and Art Muster, a weekly virtual gathering for boot camp graduates. From isolation to connection. For many veterans, art becomes a bridge between isolation and community. Sometimes a paintbrush can unlock what words cannot, said Greenberg, who shared the story of a veteran who struggled to communicate, even with his family, after leaving the military. Through the art, he found a way to express what he couldn't say in words, and it shifted him from isolation to connection, which is exactly why we exist. Greenberg said that while some veterans pursue additional art training after boot camp, the program isn't intended to produce expert painters. It's more about how you put your emotions on paper or potentially deal with any type of stressors you have. Nix, who said he grew up in poverty in the South, often returns to his roots for inspiration and finds satisfaction when his rural subjects connect with viewers. I had a painting of my grandfather's house in Mississippi where he'd raised 14 children in a 2-room home titled Don't Despise Small Beginnings, he said. A young lady teared up and was crying because the house reminded her of the town she came from, kind of the same message. I've seen how my art has touched other people, and it really blesses me like nothing else can. I think my purpose as an artist is to tell those narratives, to touch people. So when I see that happening, it gives me more than anything, more than money. Nix believes so strongly in the Foundation's mission that he signed on as a volunteer. Although he did not serve in combat, Nix has experienced loss and understands what it feels like to wrestle with unspoken emotions. I know what it's like to struggle, what it's like to need an outlet to be able to express how you're feeling, or to be able to talk about something, or just let go of some things, he said. I think art's a perfect way of doing that, because a person can sit down and have something on their mind, and without saying any words, they can let out their frustrations in a painting, and never have to tell us what it is. And that's The Art of Healing. From pottery to painting, art is helping veterans process trauma and rebuild community after service. Well, let's move on now to news from the Veterans Administration, and we'll start with the Southern Arizona Veterans Health Update newsletter from 4th of August. And their first item, Protect VA Benefits from Fraud. You can find resources about fraud targeting veterans, their families, and caregivers, and know the signs of a scam. You get advice about what to do and learn how to report scams and identity theft. And you can find out more at vsafe.gov. Participate in health research. You can join the MVP today, and that's at www.mvp.va.gov. As a veteran, you served your country before. Here's another chance for you to serve again. When you join VA's Million Veteran Program, you help researchers study how genes affect health. MVP is leading to discoveries which will save lives and improve care for thousands of fellow veterans into the future. And you could sign up by calling 866-441-6075, or you can go online at the VA Million Veteran Program webpage, which is at www.mvp.va.gov/PWA. In their local news, they have August is National Wellness Month, August is National Wellness Month, a reminder to focus on habits that support overall health and well-being. Wellness means caring for your body and mind through small, healthy choices each day. Habits like staying active, drinking enough water, sleeping well, and managing stress can improve physical and emotional health over time. Physical activity is an important part of wellness. Regular movement helps strengthen muscles and bones, supports heart health, improves balance, and may boost mood. Activities like walking, stretching, gardening, light yoga, or chair exercises are simple ways to stay active. Even short periods of movements throughout the day can improve energy and overall health. Mental and emotional wellness matter too. Stress can affect sleep, digestion, blood pressure, and mood. Taking time to relax each day may help lower stress and improve mental well-being. Deep breathing, spending time outdoors, listening to music, or talking with loved ones are simple ways to recharge. Good sleep, hydration, and social connection also support wellness. Drinking water, getting enough rest, and staying connected with family and friends can improve both physical and emotional health. National Wellness Month is a great time to focus on small, healthy habits that fit your lifestyle. Simple, daily changes can support strength, energy, mobility, and overall well-being. Next, the Southern Arizona VA healthcare system sees surge as more veterans enroll in VA healthcare. The Southern Arizona VA Healthcare System, SAVAHCS, Eligibility Enrollment Team has announced a 6.5% increase in veterans enrollment so far in fiscal year 2026, a significant rise that supports the Choose VA initiative, a national effort to increase veteran awareness of VA healthcare benefits. To find out more, learn how to check your VA healthcare eligibility, you can check out the VA News article And that's available at news.va.gov/148420. Or you can just go to news.va.gov and look for Southern Arizona VA Healthcare. VHA benefits staff at the Tucson VA Medical Center. VHA benefits staff will be available on Wednesday, August the 12th, on a first-come, first-served basis. Veterans Health Administration benefits assistants meet one-on-one with VHA benefits staff to get help with questions, disability compensation, pensions, and filing claims. This will be at the Tucson VA Medical Center, and that's at 3601 South 6th Avenue, Quarters 13 in Tucson. Again, Wednesday, August the 12th, and it will be from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. All services are provided on a first-come, first-served basis. There will be additional VHA benefits assistance sessions on September the 9th, October the 14th, and December the 9th. Veterans Health Administration VHA benefits staff will be available to meet one-on-one with veterans to help with questions, disability compensation, pensions, and filing claims. Again, Wednesday, August 12th, 10 to 2 p.m. Their number, you can call 1-800-827-1000. All services, again, provided on a first-come, first-served basis. Upcoming events, the Safford Veteran Engagement and Resource Fair. VA and community resources will be on hand, providing information and resources to veterans, their families, and caregivers. This will be on Thursday, August the 13th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., at the American Legion Swift Murphy Post 32, and that is at 531 South 11th Avenue in Safford. For more information, you can call the Southern Arizona VA Healthcare System Public Affairs Office at 520-629-1819. They ask you to join them on Thursday, the 13th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. for a Veteran Engagement and Resource Fair at American Legion Post 32, located at 531 South 11th Avenue, Safford. There will be VA and community resources on hand, providing information and resource to veterans, their families, and caregivers. The VBA staff will be present to assist veterans with their disability claims and help guide them through the claims process. If you have questions about a current claim or need help getting started, this is a great opportunity to speak directly with VBA representatives. More information, please contact Southern Arizona VA Healthcare System Public Affairs. Again, their number 520-629-1819. There'll be a quarterly mental health open house on Thursday, August the 20th, from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. in Building 4, Conference Rooms A and B, and virtually via the Teams webinar. You can RSVP at 520-629-4810. You need to do that as soon as possible to reserve your spot, and there'll be peer support, women's health, whole health, veterans justice outreach, homeless and housing resources, substance use treatment, same-day mental health screening, family counseling, employment service, psychotherapy, psychosocial rehab and recovery center, and compensated work therapy. This, again, will be Thursday, August 20th, 10 a.m. to noon in Building 4, Conference Rooms A and B, and virtually via Teams webinar. And that's the information from the Southern Arizona Veterans Health Update from the 4th of August. And next, we have a notification that I received from the VHA Office of Rural Health. They have an ORH featured product, And first of all, the website for this is at www.ruralhealth, that's one word, ruralhealth.va.gov. And there's a link on that page that will take you to Serving Older Veterans Dementia Caregiver Video Series. An estimated 36% of rural veterans have a service-connected disability that may impair or disrupt functioning, relationships, or independence, often requiring a caregiver to help manage day-to-day tasks. Dementia and Alzheimer's disease are common conditions that place significant responsibility on family caregivers to provide consistent, complex care. Rural caregivers of veterans with dementia face particular barriers to getting help. They're less likely to use formal support services such as home health or caregiver support groups. Rural communities also tend to lack medical providers to offer advice and counseling to those seeking care. Without these resources, the family caregiver often becomes the sole provider of informal care for their veteran. The Dementia Caregiver video series was developed to help bridge this gap, offering practical guidance for caregivers wherever they live. These videos were developed by the Veterans Health Administration, the VHA, Office of Rural Health, or the ORH, Veterans Rural Health Resource Center, Salt Lake City, New England Geriatric Research, Education, and Clinical Center, at the Bedford VA Medical Center, and the VA Caregiver Support Program. The Dementia Caregiver videos have been viewed almost 100,000 times since their original release in 2015. Serving Older Veterans Dementia Caregiver videos are now available on the Department of Veterans Affairs, the VA, YouTube channel. And they have, first, medication issues for people with dementia, pain and generalized discomfort, or often overlooked sources of irritability and aggression in people with dementia. This video portrays methods caregivers can use to recognize the signs of pain or discomfort, monitor pain and side effects of pain medications, and manage pain without medications when possible. Next, recognizing and managing pain in people with dementia. People with dementia lose their ability to plan things on their own, leaving caregivers to help engage their loved ones in activities that are meaningful. This video encourages caregivers to establish a consistent but flexible routine, set realistic expectations, and discover activities that provide a sense of accomplishment for the person with dementia. Engaging people with dementia in meaningful activities. People with dementia lose their ability to plan things on their own, leaving caregivers to help engage their loved one in activities that are meaningful. This video encourages caregivers to establish a consistent but flexible routine, to set realistic expectations, and to discover activities that provide a sense of accomplishment for the person with dementia. Minimizing inappropriate behavior in dementia. Going out in public with someone with dementia can be challenging because your loved one may say or do things that are embarrassing, strange, or unpredictable. This video portrays a wife taking her husband out in public to enjoy a meal together. The husband has dementia, makes several rude and inappropriate comments to strangers. The wife explains that his behavior is because he has dementia. The video highlights tips to remember when taking someone out in public, especially when your loved one may behave inappropriately to others. Preventing financial mismanagement in dementia. From missed bill payments to impulsive spending and possible financial exploitation, this video portrays some of the challenges a person with dementia may encounter when they manage their finances independently. This video provides tips for dementia caregivers on how to protect assets, like sharing responsibility for managing money and limiting access to money. It also offers tips for fraud prevention. Addressing major safety risks in dementia. Oftentimes, there are safety hazards that family members don't recognize as potential problems in the home of someone with dementia. This video portrays a couple identifying and addressing safety concerns after the spouse with dementia attempts to prepare food on the stove and starts a kitchen fire. Safety tips are provided to address common safety issues around the home, including safe storage of firearms. How much to help in dementia? Changes to cognition and memory affect what individuals can do independently for people with dementia, completing familiar tasks like cooking or managing medications becomes more difficult, and it can be hard for family members to know when they should take over or provide assistance. The video illustrates some examples of how to balance promoting independence for your loved one and knowing when to step in to help. Intimacy in dementia. The behavioral changes that come with advancing dementia can have a huge impact on relationships, especially as emotional closeness slowly changes due to both dementia itself and the demands of caregiving. The effects of these changes on intimacy can be especially difficult for a spouse or partner. This video portrays ways to maintain non-sexual intimate connections with your loved one. Improving communication in dementia. It can be difficult to have a meaningful conversation with someone who has memory or language problems because of dementia. However, there are ways to make communication easier. This video highlights some practical tips to improve communication with a person who has dementia. If you have questions about the caregiver video series, you can contact the VHA Office of Rural Health, the ORH, the Veterans Rural Health Resource Center in Salt Lake City, and that is, their email address is ohr-wr@va.gov. Note, emails sent to this email address are not secure, do not include social security numbers, medical information, or other personal data. Rural Health Navigation. The Office of Rural Health homepage is at www.ruralhealth.va.gov/index.asp. This VHA Office of Rural Health page that you can locate again by going to www.ruralhealth.va.gov. And that will take you to this page with all of the links for each of those videos that I talked about, as well as more links to ruralhealth.va.gov resources. This is your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. I'd like to thank you for joining me for this week's edition of Weekly Reveille, and remind you that you can listen to Weekly Reveille and other Sun Sounds of Arizona productions either as they stream or at a time of your choosing by going to the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org or downloading the Sun Sounds of Arizona app from either the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store, or you can listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona streaming on your Amazon Dot, Echo, or Show.